Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 46 of A Year-Long Conversation. Today, we're going to be talking about millennials. Are millennials really different? Are times today really different? Are kids today really different? Does anything really change? And, of course, Trump. Joining me, as always, is Blue Alabama's Michael. Michael, these are the final five episodes. It's kind of sad.
It is, and we're wasting it talking about these little bastard children. These millennials.
Damn kids today. You know, when they're like, are kids today really different? There's a 70-year-old man saying, hell yes, they are, throwing his teeth at the laptop or whatever he's listening to the podcast on or whatever. He's like, why can't I get this on CB radio? Why is this only on the internet? I can't get this up. But, and we're going to kind of address that. There is a lot of ageism in our culture. I mean, I made a joke or whatever, but I know in general, old people are a lot more with it than they're portrayed in pop culture. Kind of funny because a lot of talk has been that Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden are both talking about running for president in 2020, and you'd have Donald Trump, who'd be 74, and you'd have Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, who would be both older than that. They'd be in their late 70s. No country for old men. How about anybody else but old men? Because, I mean, you look at that as like your option. Could you imagine a three-way debate between Trump, Bernie, and Biden? Just all three of them up on a stage or something like, hey, you know what I hate? Prices are too much or whatever. And people like, yeah, prices are too much. I'm talking about prices for my own drugs, not just prescription drugs. I take drugs that are too much, you know. So Bernie would be like, I can relate to high prescription drug costs. I'm on 10 medicines and they all cost too much.
Yeah, you know, Life Alert would be like, all right, everybody record this. It may save us some production for commercials.
During the commercial break, there's like oxygen masks that come down from the podiums or something. Like they spring up from the podiums and they put them all and do that, whatever. Started off a little bit. This is the fifth to the last episode. We're in the final five episodes. Kind of sad to be saying goodbye. I appreciate our longtime fans for listening to 45, which was kind of really just a bitter rant on my part. Like, I don't know if I kind of lost the thread a little bit. Most episodes are no longer than an hour. An hour is kind of like my cutoff, or I try to keep it that way. Somewhere between 45 minutes to an hour. That one was an hour and a half almost. People couldn't see me, but I feel like the way I was talking, I needed like a whiteboard, and I'm just writing conspiracies. I'm like, and this is connected to this. This is why this is going on. Like Carrie from Homeland or something when she gets on it. But it was tough. I mean, I'm still kind of not over Hillary losing. I think we still hold out that brief flicker of hope that the Electoral College will do the right thing, but I really don't think they're going to. I wish they would. I mean, God, I wish they would, but I don't think they're going to.
Yeah, I don't see them doing it. And really, I don't know if Hillary would take it, even if they did, knowing what kind of controversy would follow that. Oh, it'd be a nightmare. You thought people were tough on President Obama. If Hillary that way, the South would literally secede.
Well, you know, the difference is this time we would let them play. the difference is the federal government would be like, do you need us to help you pack? We can help. We can get the U-Haul trailers by there next week if you need us to help you pack. If you're going somewhere. It's a good question. Do you think if the South seceded again, do you think we would lift a finger to stop it? The federal government and Washington?
If it come to, like, taking up arms, they'd be like, no, I don't think
so. It was a legal way to do it, which is kind of hard to stop it legally, because when people just say, I'm declaring my own goddamn rules and they march it. Like, it's like when somebody says, I'm going to make my own imaginary clubhouse. They're like, well, that's not in the Treehouse Constitution. You know, they're like, there's no rules that say you can ever do that. Because I've seen a lot of this where, like, when Obama won re-election, there was all this talk about Texas seceding from America.
Yeah.
Actually, my first novel was about that. I never could get it published. Came out there. I was a literary agent, though, hesitated to contact me, but I never could get a published. It was actually about Texas doing that and breaking off, but now people are talking about California doing that. I live in Los Angeles, and so people are talking about a Cal exit where California would be its own.
Yeah.
They would never do that, and it's really not possible, and I don't think most Californians would even want to do that, but basically what a state would have to do, they would have to get all of the other states to agree that they could do it. So it's pretty much possible, because I'm pretty sure Vermont doesn't want California to leave. Massachusetts and New York and all these other states are like, we don't want to be alone with the rest of America, so you can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So it'd be really hard to do that. And then you'd have to have a majority of Californians who would want to do it, which I don't. Californians are kind of off on their own wavelength a lot of times, but I still don't think they would want to be their own country, I don't think. But in terms of, like, if all of them voted to do that, and if a majority of states voted to let them leave and it was all legal and all that, what kind of country would it be? It actually could survive as its own country. It is something like the eighth biggest economy in the world. So it's like by itself, it's an enormous economy. You got more than 15% of the United States population inside of it. So could it be its own country? Yeah, it actually could be. But I mean, it wouldn't be good for America, and it probably wouldn't be good for California either. So, you know.
Yeah. And what would America become if they literally lost California? I mean, America would be, it'd be completely different.
Well, you would lose a massive source of income overnight.
Yeah.
The whole reason that, you know, Abraham Lincoln and the Union didn't want the South to break up is because they knew it would hurt them economically. The only way to really grow an economy is to kind of build and build and grow and grow, not divide into two different countries and lose like a huge chunk of revenue. Like, you don't build an economy by losing assets. They didn't want to lose half the landmass of America at that time. No state would want to really lose California either, because California would probably be better. It would survive better by its own as a country than America would survive without it, because, again, you're literally losing the eighth largest economy in the world taken by itself. I mean, it's massive. Not to mention Hollywood. How could you go without the movies, really?
Well, Alabama could step up Hollywood.
You said that about movies. I was like, of course, they're almost filmed in Georgia, but I guess that doesn't really matter that much. But in L.A., I joined all these casting agencies, and then you get all these notices like, apply for a job in Georgia. I'm like, what? How fucked up is this? From Alabama to California, you move across the country to L.A., be like, I'm here to be a star. No, move back to Alabama. I'm like, what? That doesn't make sense. Come on. So to get into Trump and his cabinet, it's probably even worse than we thought it was going to be. I mean, we thought it was going to be bad. He's managed to go below our worst expectations.
Yeah.
Ben Carson, who doesn't really believe in government housing, doesn't really believe government should have a role in urban development. He thinks private businesses should do it. He's in charge of a department he doesn't believe in. You have an EPA head that doesn't think climate crisis is real. Global warming is a hoax. Fought Obama tooth and nail when Obama was building a wind pipeline from Oklahoma. Oklahoma's wind was going to power a lot of homes in Arkansas and Tennessee. It was going to be great. He was going to build a transnational wind pipeline. This guy that he pointed at, the new EPA head, he fought that tooth and nail. He didn't want it. He doesn't just not believe that climate crisis is real. He doesn't believe in alternative energy, period. Like, he doesn't believe in wind power. So even when it comes to stuff the free market can do, like wind power and solar and all this, he's like, nah, we'll just go burn a bunch of dirty rocks for the shit of it. No, that's better anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see this guy coming out there, be like, Black Lives Matter. You're like, that's great. No, I mean black lung disease. Black lung disease matters. I want more coal in the air. But he's for, like, filthy jobs and stuff. You have those people. You have a head of the Department of Education, which I'm sure scares you. She's like she doesn't really believe in public schools. I mean, like, so I look at this, I'm like, he's got an EPA head that doesn't believe in the EPA, an education department head that doesn't believe in public schools, an urban housing head that doesn't believe in urban housing. All of his appointments seem to be directly in contradiction of what that department is supposed to do.
Yeah.
The worst is the labor head. Yeah. He was like an executive for Carl's Juniors and Hardee's. Forget about the minimum wage being raised to $15 an hour. He doesn't believe in a minimum wage. He doesn't mind if it's $2 an hour. And he doesn't believe in workplace regulations. I'm like, that's literally your fucking job. It's to head up the workplace regulations. And he doesn't think there should be any. And Jeff Sessions, as the Attorney General, is supposed to be in charge of, let's protect the Voting Rights Act. He doesn't believe in the Voting Rights Act. He doesn't believe in civil rights. You have an Attorney General who doesn't believe in civil liberties. I mean, what's next? I mean, Trump appointing, like, Genghis Khan, Secretary of Interior. I mean, what can he do at this point? Yeah. I mean, the people he's appointing do not believe in the jobs they're doing.
And the irony is, of all his picks so far, the one that he has chosen that actually kind of fits their role is, what, Treasury Secretary? And he picks a guy from, what was it, Goldman Sachs? The bank that he bashed Hillary for how many times about giving speeches to? Like, she gave a speech to them, but he's going to take their CEO and put him in charge of the nation's bank. I mean,
well, the guy that's the new head, they call him the king of bankruptcy, because apparently he's been bankrupt even more times than Trump has. I thought, great, he can do with America. He can do with America what he did for his own checkbook. You know, like, he's just total aside, pointed out off the podcast where we recorded Linda McMahon, Vince McMahon's
wife.
So the So the head of the WWE and the WWF, his wife, is going to now be in charge of the SBA loan department. Now, SBA is kind of important because it's something that's upwardly mobile. It's how a lot of people that are lower class or working class get somewhere by getting these SBA loans.
Yeah.
Kind of an important department. Well, Trump just gave it to a mega donor because she's one of his mega donors. And this is like the fifth person who's given him a lot of support in the primaries and gave him like a lot
yeah.
of donations that's gotten a job in his cabinet. If Hillary did this shit, his fans would be screaming. I mean, they
oh,
would
yeah.
really raise an hell about this.
Yeah, that was the entire pitch that she's bought and paid for and she's going to owe favors and ridiculous.
They're talking about drain the swamp. He is the fucking swamp, you know?
Yeah.
And he kind of admitted that during the campaign where he was talking about
yeah.
all of the, he's like, a senator calls me, they basically won't pay for play. If I write them a check, I can get around an environmental regulation. It kind of
yeah.
felt like he was bragging about how smart he is to get around this crap. And I guess people watched that, and his pitch was like, oh, I know all the loopholes, so I can be the one to fix it. That's what we heard, and I think, of course, what the reality was always going to be was, I know all this crap, and I'm going to take full advantage of it to put the worst
yeah.
cabinet you've ever. It's going to make Warren G. Harding look clean. Like, this is going to be the most corrupt cabinet you've ever seen. I mean, the Teapot Dome scandal will look like the fucking Tea Party by the time I get done with this place.
Yeah.
I mean, it really looks like he's going out of his way to get the most corrupt cabinet. Somebody had a hilarious tweet where Rudy Giuliani, when he dropped out of the Secretary of State running, all of his conflicts of interest were examined, and it was decided he didn't have enough to work in the Trump administration. I mean, first of all, the whole Romney versus Rudy debate was so hilarious because with Rudy, it says, well, he's got a conflict with Qatar, he's got a conflict with Turkey, he's got a conflict with Russia, he's got all these ethical dilemmas of why he can't do this job properly. And then on the pros column, he's Trump's friend.
Yeah.
Like, Trump likes him. With Romney, he had like five things that were really good for the job. And the con column, Trump doesn't like it. And that was it.
Yeah.
And then there was, like, he's not loyal to Trump. Everything we've seen about his cabinet picks is people that are loyal to Trump. The Democratic ranks are so depleted. If you have a Republican willing to stand up to Trump, it's kind of a miracle. And I have to applaud Rand Paul. Because all these Republicans that were always against Obama, always like, oh, Obama's doing this, he's pulling some shady stuff, they've all just totally goose-stepped behind Trump. But
yeah.
now that he's in power, none of them are putting up any objections to anybody. Even all these bullshit-ass, you know, all these people that put up all these objections, they're all like, oh, it's okay, you know, it's fine. Paul Ryan's totally behind it. And the only one really kind of saying that I'm going to fight this, Lindsey Graham and John McCain have said that a little bit, but Rand Paul said, it doesn't make any difference to me. I don't care if Obama's in the White House or Trump's in the White House. If they put up somebody wrong, I'm going to fight it. And it doesn't matter their party affiliation. So I have to, we'll see if that's true, but if that is true, then I really respect that.
And that's the thing, like,
I disagree with Rand Paul. He's one of those guys that I respect because he takes a stand on something and he actually follows through with it, which is pretty rare, especially in Congress today. So, again, I disagree with almost everything politically he stands for, but like I respect him for him taking that stand on and following through with it, knowing that
it's going to cause a lot of people in power to hate him.
When Trump was talking all this crap about he was against the Iraq War, Hillary voted for it, all this, you know, big contrast. She's a hawk. I'm a dove. You know, it's all this stuff, which doesn't really fit with what we know about Trump. But all this contrast where he said, if you appoint John Bolton, there's an indication that you didn't mean any of that stuff. And,
and
it's true. And then he's, I think the only reason Trump would pick Romney is just because he would love to torture him for 4 years. You know, like, he would love to have Romney, like, he'd be like, Romney's like, oh, I'm going to Japan this week. No, you're not. You're going to Haiti. You're on that plane. And what? Why am I going? You know, and then he'd be like, oh, there's drug cartel violence in Colombia. Guess where Romney's going this week? And then there'd be like, the next week, Romney's like, I got a meeting with Angela Merkel. No, you don't. You're going to Somalia. We don't even have diplomatic relations with them. You're going there. I think
yeah.
you just put him in, like, one dangerous shithole after another or whatever. He'd tell, like, his security to, like, swap the bottles out so Romney's constantly got diarrhea or something. Like, he just, like, drinks the local water. He gets, like, typhoid and all this stuff. I think Trump would just love to torment Romney for 4 years, but I don't think it showed Romney and Trump at this restaurant. St. George's, I believe, is the restaurant. I could have that totally wrong, but they're at this high-class restaurant. They're having this meeting. The picture is so funny. If people can find this, please look this up. But Trump is smiling like the devil. The overhead lighting, the way that it's cast, the lighting is bringing down on him. He's grinning from ear to ear. He looks like the Cheshire Cat, but the lighting of it, he looks just like Lucifer. And Romney's looks really queasy. Like, he looks like he's eating bad clams or something like that. He looks like, oh God, I don't want to be here with this man. And he's facing the camera looking really queasy, and Chuck's smiling from ear to ear, and it looks like somebody would literally look right before they made a deal with the devil. Like, that's exactly what it looks like. And he's going to reach over, shake Chuck's hand, and then Chuck's going to, like, you know, grill ponytails, and the walls turn into flames or something. It looks just like a deal with the devil. Somebody on Twitter put up a contest that said, caption this tweet, Trump just told Romney that Bill Cosby made the drinks tonight. So, I mean, he just looks really, really uncomfortable. It's kind of funny to watch. I don't really think Trump's going to forget all the people that screwed him over or didn't back him. I think he's probably got a list of names. He's just pretending. People say, oh, he's talking to Obama. He's got all these phone calls with Obama. The second he takes office, Obama, who, lose my number, you know, he's not going to take phone calls from Obama the second he gets in there. They're not going to be friends.
Yeah. There's just nothing past, present, that would make me believe that he would do that. I mean, everything he's ever done, it's always been about, you know, people that sucks up to him and people who do what he wants. And no, I can't imagine it.
When he put Linda McMahon, it was all because, you know, he and Vince McMahon, they had that contest. It was like a charity thing where they had two wrestlers fight each other. This sounds like I'm making this shit up, but they each had a wrestler fight each other. And whichever person's wrestler lost, they had to get their head shaved. Now, you know, wrestling fake. They tell the person who's going to win, who's going to lose or whatever. So, of course, Trump's wrestler won because, you know, his ass is not getting his head shaved. But he was shaving Vince McMahon's head, and he had this look of glee in his eye like a 12-year-old Burning Man. He looked so happy and excited that he was shaving this guy's head. He'll be friends with Trump for life because he let Trump publicly humiliate him. That's all Trump needs in a friend. I mean, look at all of his friends. He likes to publicly humiliate them. So if he gets that, that's all he needs. But I thought, you know, of course Trump didn't get his head shaved. What if, like, the razor's going over Trump's head and it just gets caught like a vacuum cleaner in a rug? The whole toupee comes, like, twisting off. Or something, like the whole thing just comes snatched off in one little thing. That right there, letting Trump be a dick to this guy on national television, he's like, oh yeah, I like this guy now. His wife's going to be the SBA head. I think that's the only thing he cares about is who's nice to Trump. That's all he gives a shit about.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why Ruth Bader Ginsburg better watch out, because there might be a drone come through the fucking house. I mean, really. You know, I mean, Trump, it bothered him so much that Ruth Bader Ginsburg dissed him. He mentioned it during the debate. They asked him a question about who's going to fill the Supreme Court vacancy. Well, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a real bitch to me. You know, I mean, that's all he cares about is, like, who dissed him, like, who insulted him in some way. That's all he can't get past it. He's not big enough to get past it.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, his list of priorities as president-elect is so fucking bizarre. I mean, his list of priorities is like, how old is this man? Like, oh, boycott Hamilton, dump Kellogg, boycott Starbucks. Now there's some bullshit about the new Star Wars movie. The new Star Wars movie is against Nazis, and a lot of Trump's fans don't like that it's against Nazis. You know, they have a problem with the anti-Nazi message in Star Wars. They think it's anti-white male or something like that. So they're all against the new Star Wars movie. And I thought, they said Trump only gets one national security briefing a week. Mike Pence gets six. They say he gets a near daily national security briefing. Trump gets one a week. He probably don't even get that. They probably just lie and say he shows up to this stuff. He's probably had one since he's been elected. And they say, yeah, it's about one a week. And yet he's, oh, you know what we need to do? Boycott Star Wars.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, what the fuck is he thinking? Like, why does he give a shit about this petty crap?
Yeah, I think Saturday Night Live, you know, they had Trump on there, like, getting all the, you know, constantly getting meetings and everything, and Mike Pence comes in, and he's like, Trump looks at Pence, and he's like, you're gonna run everything, right? Like, and that feels like exactly what's going on. Like, Pence getting all the briefings. Well, meanwhile, Trump's talking about Hamilton and, you know, I mean, he's gotta end this war on Christmas real quick and war on Starbucks. And,
oh, God, man. It's such a Manchurian candidate, you know, like, it's such a joke. I mean, he's like Kim Jong-un or something. I mean, he's like the Kim Jong-un of America. He's just such a joke figurehead. And his fans think he can do no wrong. If you told a Trump fan that Donald Trump shits sitting down, no, he doesn't. He shits gold. Don't you know that? I mean, they just don't believe a bad word about this guy. Like, they don't believe anything bad about this guy. His fans, They're so stupid. And I know that drives people nuts. And I'm not saying, because, you know, look, I'm not Trevor Noah, John Oliver, Samantha Bee. I didn't grow up in a liberal environment. You didn't either. We grew up around conservatives and Republicans. Most people we know are conservative or Republican. I know that they're not stupid. Most conservatives and Republicans, they have their reasons. But Trump fans are morons. I mean, when you talk to them, it'll be like, well, doesn't it bother you that he took his daughter to the meeting with Japanese Prime Minister and they talked about his business and all these conflicts? He wears a flag pin. Where's Hillary's flag pin? I'm like, what the hell does that have to do with any? I mean, like, what? I mean, like, what they care about is so. That's why they like Trump. You know it? Because somebody will be like, Mr. Trump, we need to talk about exactly what we're going to do about ISIS in the Syrian Valley. He's like, yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. But first, let me talk about Hamilton. Here's what's wrong with this musical, you know? I mean, like, he can't stay focused on, like, big picture shit at all. He gets bogged into this. And they're the same way.
Yeah.
Anything complicated about his business and the ethical dilemmas and him settling a fraud lawsuit for Trump University, Mr. Never settles a fraud lawsuit. Opens the D.C. hotel right across from the White House, and he's encouraging diplomats to stay there. It's going to cost taxpayers $1 million for his wife and son just because they don't want to leave New York and come to live in the White House. Ask him any of this. Well, he wears a flag pin. He's proud to be an American. I'm just like, this is crap. I mean, what the hell are you talking about? You know, like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I just, but yeah, you know, you said Mike Pence is going to run the show. It reminds me of how people always show those pictures of the president before he takes office and after, like Bill Clinton. Like, you know, you age like 25 years and shows like George W. Bush, his hair turned gray and his skin, you know, Obama, when he took office, he looked like Will Smith. Now he looks like Morgan Freeman. You know, like, everybody gets really old in that time period. Let's go show Mike Pence, like, today he takes office and then 4 years later he dies. Like, he just has a massive heart attack because he's doing, like, so much work. He's doing, like, 100 hours a week of work. Trump, it's just like, hey, I wonder if my Trump doesn't look any older or whatever. Trump's looking, like, just like the day he came into office, he's over there tweeting. He's like, Mike Pence died. Sad. He can't even lift his pull his weight around here or whatever. Like, the coroner was very disrespectful to me at the funeral. And, like, Trump just doesn't age a single day. And Mike Pence is like a damn skeleton. He's like a literal skeleton over there at the State of the Union sitting behind Trump or something. So, I don't know. We'll see how much he ages. I think it'll be a lot.
I'm thinking back at, like, vice president. I'm trying to think of, like, vice president's aging. Like, Joe Biden, I mean, really, he looks the same as when he took office.
He might even look younger than when he took office. I mean, he looks, like, well-rested, and, you know, he's tan.
Yeah.
And he looks terrific. People say he's 74 years old. God, I hope I look that good when I'm 74 years old. He looks like he could push a train up the tracks or something, you know? And you get a full head of hair and all this stuff. And I think the vice presidency is such a rest. You know, it's such a breeze or whatever. And even though Dick Cheney was practically running the place, you know, it's funny because I saw a picture of Dick Cheney like 20 years ago and one today, and I'm like, that motherfucker is a vampire. I mean, he's a vampire. Like, he's not aging, but then again, he has a new heart every year. So when he's just taking the heart of an orphan, like, he'll, like, bring me the heart of that orphan boy out the street or whatever, and they're matching, like, third world hearts for him and putting him in his chest cavity just like a Venus flytrap. It just eats the new heart every year and puts it in there. But, yeah, I think vice presidents typically not the most stressful job normally that they would gain any age. But this brings us to our main topic, talking about millennials. The big thing that I hear it all the time from older people or whatever, that millennials are spoiled, kind of insufferable in different ways. They're lazy, they're entitled, they've had shit too easy. I understand why they're saying that. I really do understand that, because I think on the surface it does look that way. On the surface, it looks that way. But then again, I look back at generations, and we always think things are new, but they're kind of echoes of each other, right? Like, everything is just an echo. Even Trump is like 50% Warren G. Harding, 50% George Wallace, you know, so he's got all these, he's got both of their bad qualities. Like, he's all their bad qualities wrapped up into one. He has none of George Wallace's economic populism and all of his racism and bigotry and, you know, like, he has all of his dark side. And none of his, like, positive things he would do for teachers and the handicapped and all that. But when it comes to echoes of the World War II generation, they thought baby boomers were lazy as hell. They thought they were like spoiled, entitled, trash. They're all on drugs. They're lazy. They don't want to work. They got long hair. The men look like women. What the fuck is going on? The women want to work in the workplace. It's just funny because now with millennials, a lot of people are like kind of fed up with the whole gender thing. They're kind of like, oh, why is there 30 genders on Facebook? Some man comes in, he says he's trans. The next day they go, you know, women, the woman you're talking about, is she cis? And I didn't know what the hell, I didn't know what that meant. I guess cis apparently is like just a regular woman or something. But they said that and I go, yeah, it's also just called a woman. You could just say a woman. No, it's cisgender. And I'm like, so for the 0.01% of women that are transgender, you have to now label all the rest. Like the 99.999%, they have to be cisgender instead of just women. I don't know. It seems like some of it's stupid. You have these things where gender is becoming blurrier and things like that. But that was true for the 60s as well. The men grew long hair. They wore basically the same clothes as the women. The women started wearing pants. The women wanted to go into the workplace.
Yeah.
More women wanted to be the breadwinner. A lot of men kind of were slacking off on that. So back then, gender looked way more fluid than it did for the generation before. I kind of see these things as echoes. I don't think millennials really are that different. I think that it's just sort of every generation, to the one that just got finished, every generation looks unbearable. You know, like it just looks like the end of the world.
Yeah, definitely so. And when people start looking at millennials are entitled, well, they're basically just saying they have a lot more than we had when we were kids. But the thing is, their parents and grandparents were saying the same thing about them because they had more than the generation before them. It's all about perception.
In a way, like, it only goes in one direction because obviously when you're a millennial and you have a smartphone, that looks like you have a lot more. But when you were Generation X and you had a Game Boy. Man, remember in kindergarten when everybody got Game Boys? That was the coolest thing in the world. I mean, my Game Boy had like Pong or something on it, and I thought, man, this is something else, you know? But it was like just one ball that was on the screen. And now you look at a video game, and it's like, it's Texas Zombie Chainsaw Massacre. Run through the cornfield and stop with as many zombies as you can get. Back then, it was just Frogger was awesome. You could get a frog across that highway. That was, and when the frog got hit by a truck, that was too intense. And then now you have like a zombie baseball pitcher ripping through a stadium or something. You got to chomp his way through the whole crowd or something. So one of the first women I ever dated was a single mom, and I went over to her house. She had like a 5-year-old son who was playing the most violent killer clowns, chopping up zombies. Like, what do you call this game? It was like Murder Rampage. I was like, oh, that's charming. You know, this is really, really charming. So, but I'm looking at that kid, and I'm like, you know, that's the next generation. We're probably going to get to a place where we get the generation that comes after us, and I'm like, I was willing to put up with the zombie clown video game, but the zombie clown astronaut video games, you've gone too far. I just can't take, you know, like, I mean, there's going to be every time you put a line in the sand, there's going to be a crossing of that line. Like, there's going to be something.
Yeah.
My grandkids, they're probably going to come up to me and be like, my dog is transgendered. It's going through an identity crisis. I'm like, shut up. Just be like, last week he wanted to wear sweaters, now he wants to wear a dress. He's going through an identity crisis. I'm like, this is fucking... Just get a job. Just shut up and get a job. You know, like, it's going to come down to that point. 20 years ago, like, people forget, Jimmy Kimmel, before he had Jimmy Kimmel Live, he was on The Man Show on Comedy Central.
And
he and Adam Carolla, they were sort of like, I mean, Animal House type guys, Fraternity Brother type guys. But Adam Carolla, you know, was like this, hey, I want to drink beer and look at big tits and girls on trampolines, and I've got this foul mouth and all this stuff. And then now he's having here's why Trump's a hero and all this. So a guy who didn't really used to be that conservative is now like this flaming Warhawk idiot conservative, you know, he's really gone off the reservation with his politics. Dennis Miller, same thing. He was really liberal on Saturday Night Live. Now he's on Fox News practically. I feel like today's liberal is tomorrow's conservative. It only kind of goes in one direction. When that movie Lincoln came out and you had the most radical Republicans, so like the Tommy Lee Jones, the Thaddeus Stevens, the most radical Republicans, they were fighting to admit black men were not dogs. Black men have a brain. They should be able to vote. They should be able to do basic things. Like today, that would be kind of a conservative position. You know, it's just basic. That would be sort of a conservative position. And that's how much things have changed. But back then, that was like the most radical. Well, wait a minute. You mean black men are not idiots? Well, what are you talking about? You know, like that was like radical to say something like that.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean they're not mentally inferior? You mean their brain has as many folds as us? Open that guy's brain up. I need to see this. I need to perform an experiment real quick. You know, something. It was like that was really a radical idea. Back then, they were the most radical liberals that were out there inside the Republican Party, although that shows you how much things have changed. And then today, they would just really fit into today's Republican Party because they'd be so conservative. So that shows that, like, things, it only goes in one direction. Things people are fighting about today, right now, what's the big fight? Transgender people should be able to use the bathroom. And a lot of people are on their side. 100 years ago, transgender people should burn him. Burn him at the fucking stake. Don't even waste the, just throw a box of matches on him. Like, it wouldn't have been, even coming out with that position, you might not have made it alive. You might have been dead by the end of the day. I really feel encouraged in that way, that social progress is only moving in one direction. Or it seems that way.
Yeah, seems that way.
And then the Trump train is going to come. I don't know. Because you look at it like, gay marriage, 2004, George W. Bush used gay marriage against John Kerry. A majority of Americans were against it. Only 8 years later, Barack Obama used it against Mitt Romney. A majority of Americans were for it in Barack Obama's 8 years as president. And by the way, all these people being like, well, it doesn't matter who's president. You're about to find out how fucking wrong that is. You're about to find out like how wrong you are that it doesn't matter who's president. Yeah. When Barack Obama took office in 2008, not a single state in America had same-sex marriage. And now that he's leaving office 8 years later, all 50 have it. Despite Roy Moore's best efforts, Alabama has same-sex marriage, despite Roy Moore's one-man crusade to keep us in the fucking 50s. I could see, like, Roy Moore coming in there and being like, same-sex marriage? I'm not even for interracial marriage. Let's talk about that one, you know? Let's get that one off the books or something. But, I mean, despite his best efforts, all 50 states have it. And that's just in 8 years. So a lot of people being like, Obama, he's leaving, good riddance, he was a fake progressive and all this. I'm like, you can't really appreciate how things have changed. It's like when the frog is in the boiling pot of water and he doesn't know that the temperature is being gradually increased or whatever. I think sometimes we take a lot of these changes for granted because to us, and that's part of the millennial culture, things move so quickly that because we're ready, like the second you're like, oh, I'm cool with gay people getting married, 5 minutes later you're like, why is this not... If 50 states, you know, like that's where you're at, where it's like the second you think you get cool with something, why is everybody not cool with it already? And you take it for granted that like only 8 years has went by since this was not legal anywhere and now it's legal everywhere. That's enormous in less than a decade.
Yeah.
Honestly, the fight for marijuana legalization will be slower than that. And it already is slower than that.
Mm-hmm. I think that one will be similar. I think that you're slowly seeing a couple of states jump on it, and especially when Trump crashes our economy and states are looking for like some type of revenue source, and they look at states like Colorado who's bringing in millions of dollars from, you know, marijuana sales, and they're gonna be like, oh, okay, maybe that's not such a bad idea.
Again, you're seeing the haves and the have-nots. Now, we've talked about this in previous podcast episodes, but when you look at a state like Alabama, which doesn't even have medicinal marijuana, they don't even have legalized medical marijuana, you see a sharp increase in opioids, like painkillers and things like that that are being used. And then when you see states that at least allow medical marijuana, opioid use is way down. California just legalized recreational drug use. They're going to have billions of dollars coming in through marijuana drug sales. So they're getting in revenue. They're not having to jail as many people. You have fewer people on opioids, so you have fewer people in rehab facilities. That's less of a cost to the taxpayers. Fewer people in prison, so that's way less cost to the taxpayers. So they're saving money off prison and rehab and drug treat facilities, and they're gaining money through a legalized revenue stream. And, you know, they already have a budget surplus. They're already doing pretty well. You take a state like Alabama, where it's like maybe they don't even want to fund. They want to lock people up, but they don't want to fund those prisons. Lock everybody up. They're like, well, that's going to cost you $5 in taxes. Hell no! Why can't they just work off their labor? I could see Alabama being like, AT&T bought this prison, and the inmates have to work for free at an AT&T store or something. You're like going to a Verizon store, and there's a bunch of guys in orange jumpsuits. How may we murder you? Help you today. I want to raise you. No, I want to help you. Help you find a cell phone. You know, like, they're just forced to do free labor basically forever. They don't want to pay the taxes on this stuff, but these things are expensive, so they're going to be jailing more people. They're going to be doing all this stuff. The government has to come to put more money in, and they're not getting any revenue stream out of that. Again, you're seeing inequality in state budgets and like the overall health of your state.
Yeah.
Red states have a huge heroin problem. They have a huge opium problem. They have opioid problem, painkiller problem. They call OxyContin hillbilly heroin. I don't know if you've ever heard that before. These are huge burdens, and it robs the youth of the future. One thing I think is really scary that is a little different about millennials is just like you've only seen social progress go one way, you're only seeing drug use go one way. World War II, they had some kind of drugs. There was a version of crystal meth that was very mild. It was more like speed. It was more like a stimulant. They gave it to some of the soldiers in World War II to keep them up all night fighting. So there was a little bit of a demand for speed, but there really wasn't widespread societal drug use. The baby boomers obviously changed that, but you talk about if people used to smoke dirt weed or whatever, like the marijuana in the 60s was pretty much just a bunch of bag of dirty weeds, you know? And then now you go in and marijuana's like, excuse me, sir, do you want to try the Tahitian vanilla? Because it is a wonderful flavor of extraction right here. We grow the hairs from the finest mountains in Algeria. We bring them here, whatever. I mean, it's people say, oh, I want that Afghanistan marijuana. But like, whoa, Afghanistan has a crop people actually want now, you know? But I mean, some people are after that Afghanistan dope. They're after the Afghanistan marijuana. Apparently, the hills of Afghanistan, they grow really rare strains of Kush or something. So it's right, really valuable or whatever. I mean, the Taliban, if they ever just put this Islamic bullshit aside, they could become drug kingpins like Pablo Escobar, and they could really clean up. Marijuana's gotten more addictive. It's gotten more widespread. It's gotten a lot better product. I mean, you go into a weed dispensary, it looks like a fucking Starbucks in there. You know, when you go in there and be like, this is the strawberry pomegranate coconut. I'm like, am I buying a shampoo or a weed? I don't really know what's the difference. That's changed. Heroin use is apparently up. Ultimately, what you're seeing with millennials is like a funk. It's not just one thing, because millennials typically, people think that they party more, they think they have more sex, they think they drink more. Actually, they're down in all those categories. They actually don't party as much as Generation X did, or the baby boomers did. I don't think it's that their drug use is really off the charts or their alcohol is really off the charts. I think there's just sort of an existential thing going on with millennials that's a little different than generations past.
Yeah.
What is different about millennials? This perception that they have more, they actually have less. And I don't think people really understand that. Like, I think that that's not talked about a lot, but they're actually the first generation in American history that is going to be less wealthy than their parents. So they're getting squeezed on how much money they're going to get from the parents. They're going to be the first generation in American history that's going to be less healthy, because millennial life expectancy is actually less than what baby boomer and Generation X life expectancies were. Why is that? Obesity is a big cause of it. They're less educated, which is probably the scariest thing, is the education thing, because they're actually they're the first generation in American history that's going to be less educated than their parents. So when you look at it and you say they're going to be less wealthy, less healthy, educated or intelligent, just to put it in a nutshell or whatever, I mean, these are bad trends, I think.
Yes, that is bad.
So, but like, I'm going to disagree with you here. This is a positive trend. I will play devil's advocate. Or you have, like, Trump's new, like, Secretary of Youth come in. I think American kids should be fat, lazy, and stupid. I think that's the proper way for them to be. Broke, too. Mentioned it and gone around the edges of it. But millennials are broke. We talked about this in podcast past. A lot of people say Social Security won't be around by the time we retire. Medicare may not be around by the time we retire, especially because a lot of Republicans are growing up with this mindset of we can get rid of it. I don't think in the 60s and 70s it was talked about as much of just getting rid of it. I don't think anybody would have even dared to bring that up, of getting rid of these programs. Like, I think that they would talk about changing them or tweaking them in some way. By and large, when Republicans went after, when they went after government expansion, they were nibbling around the edges. They were nibbling around urban housing or, you know, the peripherals. They were not saying, let's gut Social Security. Like, let's gut something that everybody gets. Like, it was more like, it was just the fringes of these stuff. But, I mean, to have people like Paul Ryan, because all these people that are in the Republican Party seriously talk about privatizing it is a little scary. And these are young men. Well, for politics, they're relatively young men. So the fact that you've got generations growing up now that don't see programs for granted and they don't really see the value in them is scary.
Yeah. Yeah. It is.
But you're talking about Social Security could be gone, Medicare could be gone, a pension. What is that? Like, I think people, like now you talk about a pension. It doesn't even sound positive. It makes me think of somebody literally pinching you, you know, or something.
Yeah.
So a lot of millennials will never have that. I think the private sector has completely gotten rid of the idea of a pension or a retirement, and now they're trying to do that for the government sector. Teachers, a lot of times, made more money 10 years ago than they do today because they've really started going after their pension, their benefits, all that, especially in states with a Republican Congress.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my mom mom talks about it. She goes, you know, I'm going to have a way better retirement than new teachers coming in because the state Congress has changed so many of the rules that it's you know, I don't even know in 25 years, there may not be a retirement system for Alabama teachers. If there is, it might be more like a 401k or something, but right now you have a protected retirement, which a lot of government jobs have. And I think that's the last thing Republicans really want to get rid of. So how do we take that away from government workers? We've taken it away from private workers. How can we go after the government pensions?
Yeah.
But people say, well, Social Security and pensions and things like this, they're no longer fair because people used to live to be 60. Now they're living to be 90 years old. Like, how can you keep this system afloat? Kind of understand what they're saying is that like now they pay off so much more. This idea that you can raise the age of retirement to like 70 is kind of insane. Somebody who's older can vouch for this. When you start to get about 60, you kind of start to be pushed out a little bit. You sort of start to, the older teachers, they kind of start finding ways to give them a nudge, you know, like they want them to retire. It's very hard to hold on to a job into your 70s, even when you can do it. Like, even when you're Joe Biden, even when there's nothing wrong with you and you're perfectly fit, people kind of want you to go out the door, even when you can do a job. But when you're a white-collar worker, they start nudging you out at 50, at 60, at 65. I mean, you're going to be really hard to keep your job into your 70s. They're going to say, you're not with it anymore, you're not cutting edge, whatever. We need a new generation to come in. So that's for white-collar workers. And then when you're a blue-collar worker, I mean, you physically can't do the job anymore. Like, it's physically really hard. My dad, he worked at the steel plant, and he was doing it. He quit last year. I mean, he didn't have, like, a pension or anything. He just said, I can't fucking do this anymore. You know, my shoulder's killing me, my knees hurt, my back. Like, he'd wake up like he'd been in a rodeo, and he was just working, like, 8 hours at the steel plant.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I mean, he'd go to the doctor and he'd be like, what's this bruise? What's the, you know, like, they're examining him like he's like a minor league baseball pitcher or something. You know, like, he's been hit with a fly ball. He's like, oh, this was a loose bolt. He had a hand where two of his fingernails were gone because a machine sucked his fingernails. I mean, that's like some shit that Iranians don't even do. Like, when they're torturing people or whatever, they're like, we're really going to torture you. We're going to get rid of your fingernails. You know, like, I mean, he's got the same torture level as a CIA spy, and he just had a job. He just had a job in America.
Yeah.
So it was pretty extreme, but I mean, he's like, I physically can't do it anymore. He's almost at that point where he'll get Social Security, but he's not quite there. But he's 60 years old, and a lot of people who work jobs like he worked, they physically can't do it at 60. And so when you tell somebody who's at 60, you're probably going to live to be 90 where you used to drop dead at 70. So we're going to raise that retirement up to 70. If you tell somebody that they got to wait an extra 5 years to get a hold of Social Security and Medicare, it could be a death sentence potentially.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, even with teachers, I mean, they start looking at teachers as saying, oh, well, you're not up with the latest teaching techniques or,
right.
You know, you're not up with the technology that we're introducing and implementing and all of this stuff. And I mean, plus on top of that, you got to start looking at salaries. You've been at a job for 30 years. You're going to make more than, you know, some 19-year-old that's, you know, just starting out, you know, even if it's, you know, just some working at a steel plant or a chicken plant or any just manual labor. Starting out, they're going to look to get somebody younger, fresher, and they can pay less.
Yeah, and we were hard on Bernie Sanders, especially me, though. I was pretty hard on Bernie. But I really can understand why young people gravitate towards him. Because we really are facing a really uncertain economic future. People over 60, they don't want to hear this shit. They think millennials have it made. They think millennials have it like it's just cake. It's cake and it's gravy. Oh, God, they don't even pay rent. They're living at home. Do you think millennials want to live at home? like, there might be a reason that they're in the parents' basement or something like that. I graduated college right during the Bush recession. Like, it was right. I mean, like, the first job I had at college, it was a commodities firm on Wall Street. I moved to New York for three separate times. The first time I moved there lasted 3 weeks, and I had to move back. The commodities firm opened its doors and closed in the same month because the stock market crashed. And then the second time I did temp work, and there was like a line out the door for temp work because everybody wanted. But what's the problem with the recession or whatever is that even though the economy is bouncing back, you have an entire generation, millennials, our generation, that got used to the idea of selling yourself for nothing.
Yeah.
It became all about, if I'm a writer, I used to go get a job at a newspaper and I'd make 35 grand, maybe 55 grand, somewhere like that in a year. Now I have to string together these crappy internet assignments for like $50 a pop, if that much. Huffington Post and sites like that, a lot of them don't even pay anything. They just give you exposure. We talked about that in the media episode, the shadow currency of exposure, where you don't ever really get paid. But you got 1 million likes. Oh, this is amazing. I finally made it. What is this in dollars? Nothing. like 5 cents in ad revenue. Be like, what? Sometimes I go on a website, I'll just click on ads for the hell of it. And a lot of people really don't do that anymore because you get like the cookies. And so if you click on an ad for like, okay, I'll just help this writer out. I'll just click on an ad for razor blades or whatever. You'll get cookies. But like, do you want to kill yourself? Here's the most efficient method or something. So like they'll put a cookie up there for something that's like totally unrelated. But you know, the cookies trap all of your ad activity and everything. So a lot of people really avoid ads like the plague, but it really is the only way that a lot of bloggers and writers, people like that get paid. Yeah. It's the only way that they get paid. So that's the only reason I do it. And even me doing it is like 1/5 of a penny or something like that. I mean, it varies from site to site, but you got to have so many people doing it to get even 1 cent. It's awful. The idea that you could have 1 million people read your words and you made less than $5 off of that. That's awful. But that's the reality a lot of young people face. I was reading some article on Yahoo. You know, the Yahoo comments section, sometimes I read the comments just because they're so awful. You know, because that's a job, too, getting paid to sit in the Yahoo comments section and spam, like, pro-Trump comments or whatever if a think tank is willing to write you a check. But there was some article about, oh, my God, it's Katy Perry's new, is she gay? Does she have a girlfriend? And then, like, in the comments, somebody went, I feel sorry for these kids in Obama's America. They have to do any goddamn thing they can to make a dollar. You know? They're talking about the writer of that article being like, oh, these poor kids today, they can't find a decent job, so they have to write articles for Yahoo. But, I mean, it is a little bit true because, I mean, it used to be, how do millennials get screwed? Okay, when you graduate college, your first job is your first job. Now it's an unpaid internship. That never used to be the case. Your unpaid internship was in college. I had an unpaid internship at a TV affiliate. It was a TV affiliate in Opa-locka, Alabama, CW TV affiliate. I was the only white person that worked there. It was all black. It was kind of like barbershop if it was a TV affiliate. It was really fun. I had a great time. But that was my unpaid internship. And then after I graduated, I thought, well, those days are over. And yet every media place I was applying to said, oh, do you have a year to work at CNN unpaid? I said, no, nobody does, really, unless you're already rich. And it, the whole system's kind of set up to favor you, those people in that way. But in terms of millennials, like, what else is different? Their economic prospects are bleak. It's also kind of sad because a lot of millennials truly do not. I think that's what's the scariest part. They don't even want the things that the previous generation had.
Yeah.
They don't want to have a car where strangers don't sit in your back seat. Everybody's like, oh, you should be an Uber driver. I'm like, I would rather fucking no. But you should be an Uber driver. I can't think of anything worse than loading up a car full of, like, assholes being like, oh, your leather seats are cracking. I'm going to give your car 1 star. Get the fuck out of my car then if you don't want to be in my car. You know, like, I can't think of anything worse than driving people around. Well, you can be an Uber driver. You can be a task rabbit where you're just doing people's chores. I mean, in my own home, I don't want to do my chores, but I can go to somebody else's house and, like, watch, like, do their chores or whatever. And these used to be real jobs. A taxi driver was a real job. A house cleaner, like a cleaner, that's a real job. So the fact that you can now pay somebody, like, $5 to do what a house cleaner used to get paid $200 a week or whatever it was, that's changing. So you're getting a whole generation that's, millennials are basically scab labor, if you think about it. You know, like, I mean, there's a, oh, I'm an Uber driver. I love it. I get my own hours. I'm like, yeah, you're getting paid like 5% of what a cab driver used to make. And on TaskRabbit, you're getting paid like 10% of what a house cleaner used to make. And nanny used to make. Airbnb, you're undercutting hotels so some stranger can get his pubes on your shower curtain or whatever. I mean, like, we're becoming scab labor. When we think it's empowering, that's how tech companies have sold it to us. Make your own hours. Be your own boss. You're an entrepreneur. No, you're fucking not. You're an asshole with some guy in your back seat drunk throwing up on your fucking floor mat. Like, that's not an entrepreneur. Like, that's nothing. The entrepreneurs are the tech people making all the money. I say that all the time. You ask somebody who's a millennial, what do you do for, like, a living? What's your job? I'm an entrepreneur. In what way? Well, they can't tell you. They don't even know what they do or whatever. Last week I saw 50 cents in a vending machine and I pulled it out. But technically I'm a vending machine vulture. I'm an entrepreneur in that field. But I'm like, well, you made that up. That doesn't even make sense. But I think millennials are different. if the World War II generation thought baby boomers were insufferable and baby boomers thought Gen X was insufferable, Gen X thinks we're insufferable, I'm sure we will think.
Isn't it like Generation Z?
Just doesn't the name sound obnoxious, Generation Z? Like, doesn't that even sound like they would come in and be like, hey, Pops, it's Generation Z, if you just want to slap some punk-ass kid or something like that. Like, doesn't that just sound bad? But I'm sure we'll look at Generation Z and hate them, too. But I think millennials, we're the first generation with social media. And I think that really changed things. I think that's what really changed us. And I don't think in a positive way. People believe their own bullshit. Like, because what changed was that you had to be your own hype man. It used to be you hire a PR firm or you could hire a hype man. You got to be your own hype man now. Like, now people, I'm an entrepreneur in their home. Or somebody will be like, I'm working on my empire. I'm like, you're buying groceries. You know, what the fuck are you talking about? You're like, everything's got to be larger than life, outrageous, melodramatic. Everything's a big deal. Now everything's gonna be a big deal. You gotta be a hype man. I'm a boss. You're doing laundry like a boss. So they take a picture of it and then post a line of it, put it in Instagram, but this is how a boss does laundry. This is how I build my empire. You used to just call it Tuesdays. You used to just call it like I'm doing my laundry. I'm making something. You know, like, now why is it gotta be so I'm a king in my castle? You live in your parents' basement, you don't fucking do anything, really. I feel like that changed. You had celebrity and social media and fame culture, and it all kind of swirled in together, and it made people feel like if you weren't famous or if you weren't rich or if you were just average, you were a loser. And I think that set into people so badly that now somebody who works at Burger King, they feel like they have to be a fucking star. They feel like everything they do has to be animated and like on. It can't be that like I work at the carrier plant and I do the most boring job in the world, but it's okay because I make $65,000 a year. I go on vacation. I have a nice house. It's like, no, I have to have an empire now or something. You know, like it's all got to be that.
Yeah.
Waitresses. This customer was mean to me and they'll post a video of it. I'm like, it's called a customer. Her nightmare work environment goes viral or something like that. And I'm like, I had assholes. I worked at Applebee's. I had assholes. People come in there, they're assholes. I would have loved to have seen that. If every time I had an asshole at Applebee's, I tried to make it go viral, that shit would have had like 12 hits. You know, I would have had to make up stuff to be like, well, this customer was awful. He was chain smoking cigarettes. He told me if I didn't bring him the steak out, he'd put it down my eyeball. Be like, is that all you got? Be like, I heard him use the N-word. Okay, we'll send this out a million hits or something. So, I mean, it has to be like, it can't just be like a guy's a regular dick anymore. He has to be a super dick, and it has to go viral, and everybody has to weigh in.
Yeah, you know, America, we're crazy about our super dicks.
Because we've swallowed our own hype, even that's probably changed. Like, now, before, you might have a guy be like, my dick is really tiny, but you should have sex with me because I'm a nice guy. Like, now, guys, it's elephant size. I'm going to knock you out with it. You fuck. Somebody come in there and be like, my dick's got its own banner and everything. They make, like, their own dick filter on Instagram or something with a halo on it. They put a brand. And don't, if they put a trademark name on it and all this, like, brought to you by Chad's dick or something. So, look at Trump. I mean, we have a president who openly brags about his dick size, and it works for him because it's part of his confidence and it's part of his brand. I mean, when people talk about Trump, I'm like, in like a 2-week period in the primaries, Trump bragged about his dick and started to fight with the Pope, and he went up in the fucking poll. I mean, do you remember that when he started to feud with the Pope? And that's something else I was thinking about with the third of Hispanics that voted for him. That's something else I was thinking about. I was like, you know, this third of Hispanics, he called you rapist. He called you every name in the book. And then just for shits and giggles, I'm going to start a fight with the Pope over nothing. Yeah. I just, he might as well have burned an effigy of the Mexican flag up on stage or something. I mean, he just didn't. With millennials, something that is really different and is kind of scary is dating in relationships and building families and things like that. And a lot of people don't like it. You talk about like the family unit and things like that. Yeah. I think liberals have been, like, including me, shut up, you know, but it's like, I think liberals have really become like allergic to that term, like the family unit, or they kind of don't like hearing about this. It kind of cuts against the game for liberals. But I think it is sad that millennials are now becoming, they're living at home when they're 35. A lot of them are not going to get married. A lot of them are not going to have kids. A lot of them have lost interest, relationships, like just period. Japan has such a low birth rate. They have such a sex problem. Their young people have completely given up on sex to the extent that now you have best friends just marrying each other. People just marrying each other just because they're friends. And they'll marry each other and they'll go back home and live with their parents. in their separate houses, like they're legally married, but like the boy lives with his parents, the girl lives with her parents, maybe they text each other. I thought, fucking grow up. What is wrong with you? Like, too old to be doing this. But people, I think that's the huge thing about millennials, is in some ways they've lost the will to grow up in some ways. What have people been doing since caveman times? You're a guy. That woman's hot. I need to go out and fuck her. And now a Japanese guy's like, I'll marry my best friend, Michael, and we'll go home and talk to each other about that girl we could have fucked, but we married each other instead, and we're doing it from our respective parents' houses. That makes me suicidally depressed.
Yeah.
That is depressing. Yeah. But Japan, they said they have, like, only 8 births per 1,000 people. So it's terrible. That is horrible. The teenagers they have that aren't interested in sex, they want to have sex with robots. They don't even really like, you know, show like a Japanese boy or whatever. They go, who's your girlfriend? He goes, this is my girlfriend. And it's like this robotic sex doll that he has to put a fucking car battery in and wind it up or something. And she'll come out and like say 3 words and fall over. And it's pretty bad. You know, in America, when the Kardashians finally come out with their lifelike sex robotic clones or whatever, it's pretty much over for our marriage rate and you know, like birth rate. When you have 10,000 Kim Kardashians on the street making stupid comments like, oh my God, I never noticed how blue the sky was. And this, you know, you have like every guy in America be like, oh, let's come back to my place and fuck or whatever. Like, it'll be over. You'll have a real woman. A real woman's sitting there. Well, we need to go to Outback or whatever. And then you'll have robotic Kim Kardashian being like, you want to play with my nipples? I mean, you can't compete with that. Come on. You know, like, I mean, there's no real contest between which one you want to do with that stuff. And now it doesn't just go that way. People think it's all just a guy thing. Women, too many women have lost interest in sex because of sex toys, vibrators, dildos, things like that. I mean, you'd have women be like, the next guy I have sex with is going to be marriage. And they weren't born again virgins. It was just that and I'd be like, well, why? Or something. Well, don't you ever just have these? Don't you ever just want to have sex? Well, I have my toys for that. Ugh. I mean, when you've got, like, the men over there with their sex robots or sex dolls, their lifelike balloon-breasted plastic toys or whatever, and then women are just like, that is so fucking weird. Give me this vibrating flashlight that I can put on my vagina, you know, like it's any better, like there's any real difference, you know, that they go over there and do their thing. You're talking both. Women and men have both lost. They've lost what cavemen have been doing since the dawn of time. They've lost the need to fuck. The most hilarious joke Bill Maher ever told to me, he showed a picture of like some new vibrator that looks like the spaceship in Star Trek or something. Like it was like it's like a two-headed remote control thing. He goes, what is this thing? Like, what is this thing or whatever? And he described what it did, and then he just goes, doesn't anybody fuck anymore? Doesn't anybody just fuck anymore? You know, and all this stuff. And I mean, you had Colin Quinn, when he had his one-man special, Long Story Short, he hit the nail on the head. He goes, for millenniums, what did men need? A naked woman. That's all they needed. And now, a naked woman. If a woman came out here naked up on the stage, you'd be like, what is she doing? Why doesn't she have a cowboy hat on or something? Like, you wouldn't know what to do with just a buck-naked woman. He goes, for centuries, a buck-naked woman was the height of attractiveness. And now, pornography, everything's a category of a category. You got high school girls, college girls, community college girls, girls who had a semester in community college, but thinking about going back. They dropped out, but they haven't the problems, but they want to go back next year. Categories within categories. You're talking about pornography, you're talking about sex toys, you're talking about, there's 100 different ways to keep you from actually fucking. Like, there's 100 ways to put you in a category where I think the true pioneer of our times, there's 2 of them, Rachel Dozell and Anthony Weiner. Rachel Dozell is, she'll be known as the first transracial woman. She'll be like the white woman in Seattle who pretended to be black for decades or whatever, married a black guy.
Yeah.
She'll go down. You guys watch. She'll be the next Caitlyn Jenner. She'll be the pioneer of like transracial movements. Cause hey, I live in California. I've never seen an Asian kid want to be black till I moved here. It's ridiculous. You go somewhere and there's like an Asian kid like, what's up, my homies? What's up, my niggas? I'm like, I wish somebody would beat your ass. Like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, like, why are you acting so stupid? Yeah. And they're doing this as kind of like a joke on black culture. I've never seen Asians. Yeah, transracial people, but Anthony Weiner, he's the sex scandal of the future. You'll have all kind of millennials tripped up on this. Because it's easy. Like, you start sexting somebody. Think back in the day, we kind of, I mean, when Facebook first started, I would sex girls that I probably, if I saw them face to face, I'd be like, no. Like, there's probably no way that you probably would even talk to them. But here's a picture of my boobs. What are you going to say? No, thank you, ma'am. Like, no, you accept that because that's kind of interesting, you know? So, I mean, there's all these things. I mean, be this, like, how was economics class today? Like, oh, pretty good. That professor sucked, though. Here's a picture of my pussy. Like, don't mind if I do. I'll look at this. What do you got? You know? So, I mean, like, there's these things. But we grew up in this age of sex sites and social media and larger-than-life everything. But at the same time, the reality of it is pretty sad because, really, baby boomers and even the World War II generation, they went on vacation 2 or 3 weeks out of every year. They had the money to go on vacation 2 or 3. I mean, World War II generation, they never talked about sex, but they fucked so much more than we do. They had a study that said baby boomers, by the time they were 30, they had had 12 sex partners. Generation X had like 16. The members like 16 for Generation X, and for millennials it was like 10. Yeah. So really, millennials have less sex. We have less STDs, but millennials are more scared of STDs. Every millennial you meet or whatever, you'd be like, well, you know, you're doing this webcam stuff with this girl. Maybe you could go meet her and, like, actually have sex with her. Be like, oh, my God, I might get herpes or something like that. I'd be like, have you ever actually met somebody with herpes? No, but I heard everybody has them. 99% of people in the world have them. No, they really don't. Yeah. They've been told that. You could get the clap. You could get chlamydia. I've never met somebody who's actually had gonorrhea. Like, I've known a lot of scumbags. I've known a lot of dirty people. I've never met somebody who's actually had HIV, who's actually had gonorrhea, who's actually had chlamydia. But people are terrified of these STDs. It keeps people from doing things. And you hear that all the time. They're like, oh, well, I could be online with this girl, and she's on this webcam, and she can do all this stuff, and we never have to worry about STDs. Mom, you probably don't have to worry about that anyway. Like, neither one of you probably has any. I mean, you talk to a doctor, and he'll tell you, he out of, like, 1,000 patients, he might treat one STD or something like that. They're actually more rare than people think they are.
Yeah.
But it's just the culture has become saturated with worry. But you don't see that side of it on MTV or VH1 or something like that, where you see, like, Dating Naked. That show VH1, Dating Naked or whatever. You watch it, and you watch a few episodes. Yeah, they're naked the whole episode. And, like, the guy's jumps right, here's my penis. Would you like to look at it? And they look at it the whole time. Like, here's my breast. And you see their breast, you see their penis or whatever. But then you notice, like, you watch 2 or 3 episodes, you're like, wait a minute. Nobody is actually fucking on this show. Like, nobody's actually having any sex, you know? And then it starts to dawn on you, like, wait a minute. They're naked all the time to the point to where you're so desensitized to it. You get the sense that the men don't even find the women attractive anymore. And vice versa, because they're around each other so much. Like the nudity thing is just like, oh, Tom, he's here and he's naked and I can see everything and he can see everything of me, but they're just like whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It's ironic because so many countries in the world are so overpopulated. Like, I wish Japan could have more than 8 births per 1,000 people and Sri Lanka could have less. You know, like, there's like India and Sri Lanka and Pakistan and Bangladesh, and they're just swamped with people. The Congo, Uganda, these countries are just flooded with people. And you have a place like Japan where, I mean, in Congo and Uganda, they're just like, how can we keep people from having sex? And then over in Japan, it's like, what if we made the robots look more like women and that tricked you into thinking the real woman was a robot? Like, oh, I had sex with an actual woman. She's not a robot. You're just disgusted with it or whatever. Like, her skin's real. It's not synthetic. Look at this sweat. It's not actually water. It's just weird that, like, in Japan, they're going to have to start doing experiments of, like, how to get the young people to put more. And then in these other countries, you've got so many people that the world is almost about to collapse because there's so many people.
Yeah.
But I know that only applies to certain countries. I mean, it applies to Europe, it applies to America a little bit, it applies to Japan a little bit. But then at the same time, like, we've doubled our population and we keep doubling it. And if we double it again, the earth will become unsustainable. And we can't, is this the secret to the future where people have just totally lost the ability to, they've just lost the interest in even having sex, and then you start seeing the population cool off? I mean, is that where we're going?
I mean, we're in a situation where the earth is becoming, especially more and more with global warming and climate change, you know, we're having difficulties now with enough resources for everyone. Just imagine, you know, if it did double. So, I mean, maybe this is a way, if you want to look at the positive side of it, you know, at least this is slowing down. The problem is, like you were saying, it's slowing down in the wrong countries, and it's speeding up in the countries that it needs to slow down in.
That's true. The populations with the highest birth rate, it's almost an exact match for the countries that least need them. It's not like Japan where there's all this money, huge government that can take care of people. Iceland, Norway, all these countries where there's like a lot of social services. The biggest population and the biggest population growth is in like Pakistan. What's Pakistan's idea of like birth control? A handgun. They don't know what, I mean, there's no social safety net. There's no government services. That the government is about to collapse at any moment. The countries that are the best equipped to deal with population growth are countries where they are literally begging people to have kids, and the countries where they just can't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Uganda and Congo and Sri Lanka, they just can't take on any more problems at this point. Like, their government's just maxed out. They don't have a real system for that. Another thing that might slow down population growth is transgender people. You're dealing with a lot of, like, heterosexual couples that can literally not have kids now.
Yeah.
I remember when I used to date in New York, I'd be all excited. I'd be like, oh, I met this girl online. She's 6 foot tall or whatever. I'd be like, be all excited about it. I'd be like, oh, it says here, TS. TS. I, she might work at the airport. She might be a TSA agent or something like that. See a lot of couples that are not able, literally not able to have kids or whatever. There's no way around it. And,
yeah.
It would be kind of funny, though, to see two gay men go into a doctor and be like, we need some birth control. We just don't want to wind up with, we're just not ready to be dads, just get at this point or whatever. Millennials, our generation, you know, really, are we insufferable? Are we that different? Is there hope for the future?
Are we insufferable? Yes.
I mean, I think, again, it's just a matter of context. If you're 70 and looking at millennials, yeah, probably. But it's the same way as, you know, baby boomers looked at you. And I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I look at the students that I have, and I'm like, I hate your generation. Like,
yeah, it's kind of the job of a generation to hate the one that comes after you. But you're also in that position, too, when you're young. When I was young, I was like, God, I hate baby boomers. Like, I just fucking can't stand these people. You know what I mean? Like, and I hate the ones that are older than you. Generation X, God, they just always have to suck up the spotlight. Everything's about them. You know, they're always constantly, like, in the spotlight. Everything's got to be about them. Look at these aging narcissists and all this stuff. So I didn't like the generations that were older than us when I was young. When I was a teenager, they were between me and everything I wanted to do. You're 16. You want to get with that hot girl? Who's she listening to? Her preacher tells her it's wrong. What does that baby boomer got against me? You know, you just want to stop it. Every girl you meet in Alabama will be like, well, I can't. My church says it's wrong. I'm like, oh, my God. Why does this baby boomer institution want to stand between me and, like, the only thing in the world that will make me happy? You know, everything's a frustration. Everything's about when you had jobs as 16, 17, every job I have, the boss is older than me, and I hate it. Like, when I was 16, I feel like the baby boomer bosses I had, they liked being awful to me. Like, they, and I wasn't a punk. Like, I wasn't like a punk who came in. Like, I came in there, I was a mess. I'll do what you say. I don't have, like, a face tattoo. I don't have all this shit. Like, there's really no reason for you to treat me like this.
Yeah.
One boss in the grocery store told me to go out and pick up the stray grass blades out of the cracks in the concrete. I bent over and picked, like, every crack in the concrete that had straight grass blades. I mean, this was, like, thousands of grass blades out in the parking lot, and picked them all out one by one. I was up there for 2 hours. He went home for the day, and the assistant manager just said, come on inside. This is ridiculous. You know, but, I mean, I was still out there for 2 hours doing all this crap, and we'll just pour some Roundup out here. So, you know, it's a grocery store. We sell Roundup on the shelf. Why didn't he just tell me to do that? But, I mean, he just doesn't like you. He wanted to do something. You know, he just wanted you to suffer. You have a 40-year-old man, it's funny to make a 16-year-old kid suffer, you know, like the bar, you know. So for us, the bar is set pretty low. As long as when we're 40, we're just not complete assholes to the 20-year-old, the bar is set pretty low. So, I mean, you know, I think there is a lot of ageism in our culture to where a lot of our podcast listeners, I think, are probably older than we are, which I don't care. I don't care how old somebody is. If somebody wants to listen to this, I don't care if they're 25 or 75. It makes no difference to me. But I think from what I can tell, which I can't, it's frustrating with iTunes because they don't really put, like, who, like, how many listeners you have, who they are. They don't give you any. It's like, like, all the information goes into a black box. It's like we record the podcast and I send it into a black hole and I hope aliens on the other side like it. Like, that's what it is. No information comes back. How many people listened to the last episode? Could be one, could be 1,000. I have no idea. Like, there's no data at all. But with our listeners, I get a sense from the few that have reached out to me, the people that have talked to me, that they're a little bit older. That's fine with me. I couldn't care less. What I don't like is the ageism of, in media especially, it's like you don't count. Literally, the Nielsen ratings that measure advertising, so for basic cable and broadcast, every TV commercial, they assign determine the dollar amount based on the Nielsen rating of how many people from 18 to 49 watch this show.
Yeah.
That's how they get your ratings. That's how they get your dollar amount per. If you want to put the Crest toothpaste on there, how much money they pay to put it on The Walking Dead or Murder, She Wrote or whatever it is, that's all determined by the Nielsen ratings of 18 to 49-year-olds. So what that says is that the second you turn 50, you might as well be dead in terms of TV, audio, because they don't care what you watch. And that sucks. Because, you know, my mom's 60 or whatever. She has more buying power than I do. Half the news of my house comes from my mom. So what I mean by that is, like, they think, oh, we'll advertise to the 30-year-olds. And the whole thing is that they think somebody who's over 50, their mind's made up, so advertising doesn't reach them. So they can put a new hamburger or toothpaste or sports car or whatever, and people that age are not going to go out and buy it because they're used to their brands. And so they've got what brands they use. They've already been using them for a while. They're going to keep using them the rest of their life. So they want to reach people in their 20s and 30s. Really, if they can reach you before you turn 35, that's the best. So, like, I'm still in that sweet spot a little bit. But they want to reach 18 to 35, especially because it's all about trying to get you as a lifelong customer and you're still open to new things. I think they have to change this. Maybe that was true once upon a time or whatever, but I think people who hit 50 and well into their 60s or whatever, they'll try new things. If they see a new sandwich, they'll go buy it. If they see a new kind of toothpaste, they'll buy it. I think they have to change the way that they think about, like, how ads are done and who is marketed to them, because it is incredibly ageist to look at my mom, who she makes a lot more money than I do. But you tell her, be like, oh, what you watch on TV, who cares? You're over 50, even though she has more buying power than I do. like she buys more stuff than I do. She has more buying power than I do. And then they're all like, oh, I know who we're going to get. We're going to get those 25-year-olds. Oh, you mean the millennials living at home because they're fucking broke and their mom is the one buying everything for the house? like mom, who's over 50, is the one buying everything for the house? Like, you mean, why do the system is screwed up? And I think it really is kind of insulting to people who are older by not counting them at all in terms of the ratings.
That's a really good point.
I just want to remind people, episode 47, we're going to be answering some questions from the listeners and the audience. If you have any questions for Michael, send it to, what's your web address, Michael?
BlueInAlabama.com.
Or reach him on social media. For me, ask me any question you want to on Twitter, either publicly or in a direct message, or you can post it to Alabama Liberal in the comments section. There's a lot of ways to get a hold of us. Just send in those questions, because in 47, if we don't have enough, I might ask friends and family what they want to ask us or whatever. But anyway, it's going to be Brody and Michael Save America. We're going to offer solutions to all the biggest problems. It's also going to be kind of a somewhat holiday episode. Michael, are you going to be wearing your Santa outfit?
I wear my Santa outfit for every episode. I don't know.
About that in March, I was like, why did you wear that Santa outfit? Maybe you won't judge me for wearing my Tooth Fairy outfit and what I like to wear. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening.